Hello, everyone. Welcome to our weekly Course in Miracles study group. As always, I'm so grateful that you all are here and that we are taking this time to join, to strengthen these ideas. My goodness, of course, we know we need them. So before we do our meditation, I just want to announce that next week, so in 1 week on Sunday at this time, I will be speaking in the Awareness Conference. It's one of the big online conferences that is co-sponsored by the Teachers of God Foundation. It's Bill Free's baby that he has gotten off the ground for, I think this is his third conference. It's a virtual conference. It's free to watch live. So I did put the link in the chat. I'll do that one more time for anybody who just came in and maybe couldn't see the earlier. But Freedom Cartwright and I will be presenting a two-part session on Saturday night and Sunday night on racism and A Course in Miracles. It's going to be really powerful, and there's many, many, many other conference presentations happening. So it's free to watch live. If you want to buy the replays, you know, that's an option, but you can just tune in live to whatever you want to watch. So we won't have a study group next week, but we will resume the following week. And the following week, I think after tonight, I think there's only two cameos left that we haven't read. So we'll be finishing up the cameos, which is super exciting. So having said that, let's settle in. Let's take a few minutes to just join, to join together. So I invite you to join me in just settling in. And we tend to live from the neck up. So let's really drop into our bodies, our illusory bodies that feel very, very real. And if you'd like, you can just maybe wiggle your toes just to sense your feet. Maybe just sort of shifting back and forth to feel yourself sitting in your chair. And then just softening your abdominal muscles, just literally softening the belly. And perhaps finding that that simple act of softening the belly just helps you drop in even more. Turning attention to this quiet center. Even if it doesn't seem so quiet right now because of the activity of the mind, trusting that this quiet center is there. And we simply need to be willing to go there. We don't have to force it or worry about it or do anything. But just trusting that there's this quiet, still space within each of us that we all share, that I'm sure we've all touched upon at some time. And imagining it's this space within where we join with the Holy Spirit, where we are connected to the Holy Spirit and to each other. And tapping into your sense of willingness. Willingness to loose the world from all we thought it was. Willingness to question everything. Willingness to hand over our perceptions, our judgments, our beliefs, our thoughts, knowing that every time we hand anything over to the Holy Spirit, it's an exchange. We gain a miracle. We get back a miracle. In this holy instant, we give to you. Be you in charge, for we would follow you. Certain that your direction gives us peace. If we need a word, a thought, or a tranquil open mind, these are the gifts that Holy Spirit gives. And we gladly place Holy Spirit in charge by our request. And checking in with your belly, having a soft belly, releasing those abs, and just taking three deep breaths, just softening the belly and naturally breathing in, expanding the belly, and breathing out. And two more times, taking nice deep breaths. With that love in your heart and light in your mind, coming together to our perception of right here, right now. It always feels so good to get still together. So thank you everyone for holding this space. Tonight we're reading Cameo 13, As You See Him, You Will See Yourself. I see a number of other people have joined since I closed my eyes. Welcome. Just an FYI, we won't be meeting next week because I'll be speaking in the Awareness Conference, but we will resume the following week. And if you'd like to join Freedom and I in our session in the Awareness Conference, I put the link in the chat. It's going to be great. So Cameo 30, As You See Him, You Will See Yourself. This is page 1862 of the CE. What do you do when your professional responsibilities seem to conflict with your spiritual path? This, broadly speaking, is the question answered by a short piece of guidance that Helen received from Jesus on June 19th, 1968, near the end of the process of her receiving the text. The professional responsibility in question was psychological testing, including the diagnosis of patients. Psychological tests were highly relevant for Helen and Bill. We see two of the tests familiar to them crop up in the dictation itself. In chapter one, Helen mentions the Rorschach test, quote, a Rorschach response of footprints to the top red on two. That's the reference in the dictation. In the Rorschach, the well-known test in which a subject's perception of 10 ink blots is analyzed in order to identify personality characteristics and even thought disorders. Also, Jesus several times mentions the sentence completion test, in which subjects are presented with the beginning of a sentence called a stem and asked to complete the sentence any way they like. Responses are believed to reveal the subject's attitudes, beliefs, fantasies, and emotional conflicts. In addition, Bill and Helen were deeply involved with the personality assessment system, a highly sophisticated tool for measuring a person's personality type along three different dimensions: intellectual, procedural, and social interpersonal. Bill and Helen worked for many years with its originator, John Gittinger, helping him develop the PAS according to research, academic papers, and in Bill's case, teaching. Indeed, according to Gittinger, Helen considered the PAS her primary professional work until 1975. And here's what Bill had to say about it. And before I read this, I just want to mention, even though this cameo is talking about the seeming conflict between Helen and Bill's profession versus and the course, you know, being perhaps two different things, having a conflict, my guess is that all of us in some way can relate to this in some way, either to job responsibilities or other responsibilities in life, because we have to make judgments all the time, right? There's many things we have to navigate. I mean, even, yeah, I'll stop there, but thinking of it more broadly, and I'm hoping that we all can relate to this, not just it being about psychological testing, but anything that we do that might seem in conflict with the course that we're called upon to do. So, okay, top of the next page, here's what Bill said about the personality assessment system. By using the Wechsler Adult Intelligence Scales and sophisticated psychometry, An individual's personality can be defined and his behavior predicted with extraordinary accuracy. In fact, after working with the PAS, I thought John Gittinger had designed the most powerful descriptive and predictive system in the world for assessing personality. I also felt that, as a personality assessment and predictive tool, the PAS ranked with the discoveries of Sigmund Freud and Carl Jung in psychology. So that's what Bill said about the personality assessment system. So the commentary continues. Was there a conflict between this psychological testing and what Bill and Helen were being taught in A Course in Miracles? We can imagine two very different answers to that question. The first one is yes. Such tests affirm that the personality, along with any mental illnesses identified, is the person. This runs directly counter to the course's teaching that the person is in fact a spiritual being, a son of God, who merely believes he is a limited human with a flawed personality. The other answer is no. In administering such tests, one is merely performing one's professional duty. This really has nothing to do with the course. One can assess someone's personality and even diagnose mental illnesses without in any way affirming that the person is not a son of God. Jesus' answer, interestingly, is both of these answers at once. So this is what Jesus says. As you see him, you will see yourself. Whether this be through the use of psychological tests or by making judgment in some other way, the effect is still the same. Whenever you have judged anyone, it is impossible for you not to make this judgment on yourself. If you see one of your brothers, who happens to be a patient, as exhibiting signs of a thought disorder, then you will experience the same thought disorder in your own perception. For whatever your thought may be about anyone determines how you will respond and react to yourself and everyone about you. Take heed then, when you are called upon to fulfill your function as teachers, that you teach the truth about God's Son. The only way that you can experience any peace while this unfortunate necessity for interpreting illusions remains is to recognize that you are discussing only illusions and that this has no real meaning at all. Try to say a prayer for your brother while doing this, and you will call forth and experience a miracle instead. So I just want to pause before I keep reading here, because this really is striking. So on one hand, Jesus is saying that yes, whenever you've judged anyone, it's impossible for you to not make this judgment on yourself. So clearly, if you're seeing something wrong in one of your brothers, if you're making a judgment, you're laying that same judgment upon yourself. And yet, we have this unfortunate necessity, I would say, of having brains in this world, that our brains are wired to judge. That is just what they do, probably constantly, unless we're consciously attempting not to judge. I mean, we have to navigate just being out in the world every time we step out of our door. And I feel like there's judgment involved in all of that. So the key then is to remember that we're discussing only illusions that have no real meaning at all. And how that's the miracle. That's where we're ending here. And what Jesus says, try to say a prayer for your brother while doing this, and you'll call forth and experience a miracle instead. So this is where, I mean, this even relates to the loved ones work that we're doing. You know, race, sick, like none of this exists at the level of truth. None of it exists at the level of truth, but here we are experiencing ourselves as bodies. And so it's as if we're asked to, again, to hold to or the truth in mind as we allow ourselves to be where we are. So I can be willing to see the truth in my brother as perhaps I, in this case, might need to do a diagnosis. Or if you're in conflict with somebody, if you're having a struggle in a relationship, you have to work your way through, you know, the process of working it through, and yet you can still hold the truth in your mind without bypassing perhaps the learning that needs to happen. So let's keep reading with the commentary. This answer clearly comes down heaviest on the side of the first answer, that there is a conflict between psychological testing and the course. This theme occupies fully 2/3 of the message. The first problem with this testing is that it essentially lays a judgment on the person being tested. It tells him that whatever thought disorder is uncovered by the test is a real part of his identity. On an even more basic level, the testing defines him as a patient, when, more accurately, he is one of your brothers who happens to be a patient, emphasis added. In short, it teaches this person that he is not God's son. However important the effects are on the patient, though, Jesus's message focuses mainly on the effects on the psychologist administering the test, in this case, Bill or Heaven. Excuse me, Helen, not Heaven. Bill or Helen. These effects are based on a principle Jesus quotes here from the text, as you see him, you will see yourself. We can think of this as a kind of reverse projection. With projection, our self-perception shines out and determines our perception of another. But here, our perception of the other shines back on us and determines our self-perception. The principle becomes the basis of lesson 134 in the workbook, in which any sin we condemn someone else for, we will then condemn ourselves for. For example, if we judge someone for being disorganized, we will then unconsciously search for our own areas of disorganization and judge ourselves just as mercilessly. Just to break this reading up a little bit, let's pause here and let's talk. I want to see if anything is coming up for anybody so far. So this reminds me of that saying, you know, you spot it, you got it. So not only are we coming from our perception and projecting outward, whatever judgments we lay on another then are going to, you know, we're going to perceive that, or that judgment is going to somehow affect us as well. So any comments or questions about this so far, or any insights, any sentences that stand out to you? I'm just going to grab some water.
Yes, Corinne, I have a quick question.
Hi, Jason.
So I haven't read past chapter 4 yet in the text. Does Jesus say anything about the difference between discernment and judgment? Because what I've learned, I don't know who it was. It could have been Eckhart Tolle. It could have been David Hoffmeister. I think it was Eckhart who says that judgment is not necessary even for survival. You don't need fear to survive. You just need a little bit of common sense. So to discern where the edge of the cliff is, you know, things like that. I don't know. I was just wondering.
That's a great question. And actually, as you are speaking, I am just looking up the word to see if the word discernment even appears in the course, because it doesn't ring a bell to me, but okay. I don't see discernment is discernment, I believe I'm spelling that correctly. That's not, if I'm spelling that correctly, that is not coming up in the course, but let me just try discern and nothing. Okay, so I don't see it. Doesn't mean it's not maybe referencing somewhere an idea about discernment, even though it's not using the word, but that does sound like Eckhart actually, as you were saying that. So it's interesting he says that you don't need fear to survive, because in the ego realm, the ego is made of it. Like that's what the ego is made of. So how could you possibly free yourself of that when the ego is made of that. And I mean, that's what the Course is leading us to, because the Course is leading us, you know, to rely fully on the Holy Spirit, to recognize that we don't need fear and that, you know, love is all that we are. So that's just interesting, that idea about, you know, not needing fear to survive. And I guess all I can say, and I'll see if anybody else has any thoughts about discernment versus judgment. You know, it depends. I almost feel like judgment, if we're saying it with a negative connotation, like if we're saying, you know, judging in terms of like laying a judgment on top of another person versus judging in the discernment kind of way, we could use the word a little bit. There's like nuances there. So I guess that's why discernment versus judgment have been the two terms that have been identified by Eckhart. I don't know. Honestly, there's part of me, if I'm honest about like where I am, like letting myself be where I am, I still feel like I judge all the time. It's a matter, we can't fix it ourselves. That's the thing. Like, I can't not do it. Corinne is always going to judge. Corinne is the self-concept, the identity in this world, you know, that I have made and I walk around thinking that I am. And we could say that, you know, Corinne is always going to judge. Corinne's always going to have anxiety. Corinne's going to have problems. But what I'm learning is that that's not who I am. I'm not Corinne. And in that learning my identification on Corinne loosens. So that's why I experience, you know, a healing of intense anxiety. That's why I do feel I have moments where I'm not in judgment, where I'm not judging, but that's not from me. It's because I've sort of stepped out of the way and let the Holy Spirit, you know, come through. So that's just interesting. I mean, I don't really have any like, you know, answers or anything, just sort of pondering different ideas about that. But it's a nice idea that we don't need fear to survive, but because the Course teaches us that the world is made of fear, like it's really based on a fearful thought system, that it's not that we are trying to cleanse, it's not that the ultimate goal is to just cleanse the world and have it be a loving world. It's that ultimately the Course is leading us to see that the cleansing is a part of it, but that it's a dream, that it's not actually our nature. It's not actually our truth. It's not even actually where we really are. But the cleansing piece is like, you know, a part of that awakening process, that recognition process. So I don't know. Those are just some of my thoughts, Jason. It's a really great question. And the other place, that I could look for the word discernment is in like the CE edition. Cause I just, when I searched, I was searching in the FIP edition, and in the CE, you know, there's more words. So maybe after the call, maybe when I can bring up my Kindle, I can search. But thank you for the question. Yeah, it's really good. Anybody else have any ponderings about discernment versus judgment? Hi, Dee.
Hi. In my mind, I'm thinking that even though they don't use the word discernment, it's our right mind. So it's like seeing everything as love or a call for love. Just choosing the right teacher to me would be the spiritual discernment.
Mm-hmm. I like that. I really like that. Spiritual discernment is choosing the right teacher. And spiritual discernment also requires awareness to be able to choose the right teacher, like to recognize when I'm in judgment or fear or whatever. So I like that, Dee. Thank you. It's helpful. Cheryl and Mary Beth. Hi, Cheryl.
So I was thinking about discernment, and really, you know, when you look up the word discernment, it says the ability to judge well. So it's really, the word really does mean to judge. But then there's another definition in Christian context that says perception in the absence of judgment with a view to obtaining spiritual direction and understanding. So maybe we're just, when you're looking at discernment in text, maybe that's just not the right word, because really judgment and discernment, kind of the same thing, but perception is what we're really thinking about. If you're like you said something about the edge of a cliff, and I hear you say that when you're discerning something, then maybe that's just your perception. So maybe that's really the word.
Yeah, that's interesting. Thank you for looking those up, Cheryl. That was helpful to hear. You said something that I wanted to add to, and now it's escaping me, but darn. But that was helpful, thank you. Mm-hmm. I appreciate it. Mary Beth.
Yes, for me, I've been working with judgment and discernment for a while, and judgment for me comes from fear. That is, judgment is definitely from the ego. Mm-hmm. And discernment is more like a spiritual principle, comes from wisdom, from intuition. It's a deeper knowing, understanding and stuff. So for me to offset the judgment that my ego self, you know, wants to go into in this world, I look for discernment, you know, because like you said, I can't stop Mary Beth from judging, but I can turn to the Holy Spirit and then try to respond, try to go into discernment, you know? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it's a love and a fear thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's really the bottom line, is that whether it's judgment or discernment, it's about not relying on my small self to do it. It's about turning to the Holy Spirit. So that's really the bottom line. It's about turning to the Holy Spirit and letting the Holy Spirit decide for God for me, or for forgiveness for me, or for love for me. Because of myself, Corinne doesn't know how to choose love or forgive or do any of those things. It's the Holy Spirit in us. And that's where the Course is asking us to do so little. And we get, you know, so, you know, we want to make it like, we want to really, really get into this and do it right. And yet, like, the Holy Spirit's like, just want you to give everything to me. Jason, then Andrea.
I don't know if I told you guys, but I told somebody, I told David, I think, that the Holy Spirit is speaking, always speaks to me through Google. So I looked up discernment, and you know what it says? The second definition is, in Christian contexts, perception in the absence of judgment with a view to obtaining spiritual guidance and understanding. So perception in the absence of judgment with a view to obtaining spiritual guidance and understanding.
Interesting. Is that, Cheryl, was that the second definition that you read too? Because you were actually breaking up a little bit at that point, so I couldn't.
Oh, okay, yeah, that is. I actually put it in the chat too, so people can see it.
Oh, awesome! Thank you, Cheryl. Thank you, Jason. Andrea, are we going to add?
Yeah, I was in sort of the spiritual tradition that I have sort of come from. Judgment, the word judgment, gets kind of a bad rap. You know, judging anything, and because of that, some people have tried to say, oh, I wasn't judging, I was discerning, and the big, you know, big difference. and the way I'm hearing it in this cameo is, it almost doesn't matter. It's that you could use either word almost synonymously as labeling your brother as a physical being, which is not the truth of who your brother really is. It's anything that labels them with more grounding in the illusion, as opposed to the truth of who they are, is where the problem occurs.
Yeah, that's it, Andrea. Thank you for that. It is all about how we're seeing our brother. Are we labeling and getting stuck on the label and making that label who they are, fused, you know, that is them? Or regardless of that, even if we have to do that for our job, can we still be willing to see the truth of them? And again, we need the Holy Spirit for that peace, but that's where it's just the willingness to have the Holy Spirit show us who our brother really is. And it's just so interesting too, because I've said this before, but I teach a class in the college where I teach in our graduate program on diagnosis. So whenever I read stuff about Helen and Bill and, you know, diagnosis and whatnot, like, this is just so very relevant. And it's actually reminding me to, because I'll not use course terminology with my students, but I will remind them, you know, of this type of thing, that it's a diagnosis. And actually nowadays, the students seem to be very aware about labels and, you know, not just like the negative effects and not seeing the person as the label, but it makes me wanna just remind everybody after reading this cameo. Thank you everybody for-
Saul Newman, husband Saul or two others.
Oh, you got mute, Dee, thank you. okay, so let's keep reading. We just have a few paragraphs left. We're at the very bottom of page 1864. It starts with, here the principle works with equal specificity. So that's where we're picking up. Okay, wait, I want to back up just the last sentence of the prior paragraph just for the context as we flow into the paragraph we're about to read. So we ended with, for example, if we judge someone for being disorganized, we will then unconsciously search for our own areas of disorganization and judge ourselves just as mercilessly. I want to add, I'm sorry, I'm going to lose this thought if I don't say it now. I see this so clearly show up for me now. If I judge someone else, I don't know if any kids are around, so I won't say what I want to say, but I will feel like a piece of SH, you know what? Like when I judge, there is a physical effect on me and my mind, loss of peace, that I now notice that like that goes hand in hand. So if I lapse into judgment and catch myself, you know, if I don't catch myself, the consequence is then how I later feel, might not recognize it for a day or two or whatever. But when we, I mean, that's the ego feeding the ego. When we judge another, the hurt that we are causing ourselves is that loss of peace and loss of awareness of who we really are. If we're seeing them as a body and being a schmuck or whatever, we're now losing our own true identification with who we really are. So it goes hand in hand. So moving on, here, the principle works with equal specificity. Jesus tells Helen and Bill that if they diagnose someone as having a thought disorder, you will experience the same disorder in your own perception. This may sound strange until one remembers that generations of psychology students have sat in abnormal psych classes feeling as if they themselves are suffering from each new disorder as it comes up in class. So the way Helen and Bill see this patient will boomerang back and infect their self-perception, but it won't stop there. Jesus tells them it will also infect how you will respond and react to everyone about you. The ripples from this one judgment will simply keep going, coloring everyone and shattering peace. This certainly sounds as if Bill in heaven, I did it again, I'm calling Helen heaven. This certainly sounds as if Bill and Helen should become, in a sense, conscientious objectors, who, because of their spiritual convictions, refuse to shoot their fellow man with psychological tests. That, however, is not the message. By labeling such testing as an unfortunate necessity, Jesus is clearly acknowledging the need to do it. What he is asking is that, as Helen and Bill continue to go through the motions of carrying out the tests, they do so with an overriding consciousness that they are, quote, discussing only illusions, and that this has no real meaning at all. They need to remember that the tests measure only patterns in the mist. This is clearly not meant to be a half-hearted awareness in theory, tucked somewhere in the back of their minds. Rather, it is meant to be a highly intentional thought held foremost in a mind, a thought so powerful that it can actually determine the emotional effects of the testing. Ideally, they will even go one step further and say a silent prayer for this brother who is so at risk of being taught falsehoods about his identity. By doing so, they will call forth a miracle for him. Rather than feeling judged and labeled by shrinks in lab coats, he will feel blessed by angels. And the miracle will not stop there. For the principle that, as you see him, you will see yourself, does not just work negatively, it works positively as well. Notice how the last sentence says, call forth and experience. By calling forth a miracle for another, Helen and Bill will experience a miracle for themselves. Awesome. That concludes Cameo 30. So this idea in this example of psychological testing, Jesus is asking Helen and Bill to hold an active idea in their mind that they're talking about only illusions. So this is a piece that I really like to pick up and take out into our lives, because we're not obviously all giving psychological tests and, you know, doing diagnosis, but whatever the relationships are that we have in our day-to-day lives with colleagues and family and friends, and the conflicts, the challenges, the things that come up, can we hold in our minds that we're talking about only illusions while, you know, we're working through whatever it is that we need to work through? Because holding the ultimate truth in mind, not like slapping it on somebody, which is in, you know, the love lens, we talk about weaponizing course teachings, and we'll be talking about that again in the conference presentation next weekend. When we take these teachings about, like, you know, on the highest level that this is an illusion, and we turn to a person who's struggling and we say, hey, don't worry about it, you shouldn't be struggling, this is all an illusion, or don't be mad at me, this is all an illusion, that's when we take these teachings and they become weaponized. So it's the ego using these teachings to attack. But if we hold these instead in our minds as a teaching for us to learn, us ourselves, we are keeping an open space for the Holy Spirit to come in, for us to have a shift, to offer that miracle to our brother or sister, and to then experience that miracle for ourselves. And I feel like I know we've all, if anybody has any examples that come to mind that you feel moved to share, I'm all ears. I've definitely seen this, you know, many
times. So, Corinne?
Yes.
So that would have, by doing that, that would have a ripple effect in a positive way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. That's the interlocking chain of miracles, the interlocking chain of forgiveness that the Course talks about. When we, you know, hold that truth in mind and see our brother as they truly are through the Holy Spirit, that touches them, it touches us. They then might, you know, go and do something differently with another person. It's that interlocking chain of miracles and forgiveness.
Yeah, I think I would have to pray.
You think you have to
do that?
You've done, Paula, you've had many examples. Many
examples
that you've shared on this call of things like that.
Okay.
All right. Dee, were you going to share?
So I'm seeing that this whole course is about spiritual discernment. That's what we're learning, how to see our brothers correctly.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I love that. That's a beautiful way of putting it. It's so true. We can't do that of ourselves. I have a great, you know, maybe I know I've shared this before on the call and in other places, but I have that one story where I decided once, I was going for a 5-mile walk, and I decided I was going to see the truth in everybody that I passed. I was going to bless everybody that I passed. And I was exhausted by the end of the walk. It was depleting, and I was like, you know, over it. And a totally different time, same place, same walk, I instead felt that opening, you know, in my heart. And it was something that came through me where I felt like everyone that passed me, that I passed, that I was like blessing them, and it came from a different space. And so there's like the discernment between, you know, was it coming from me or was it coming from the Holy Spirit? Because when I was seeing my brother, when I was, you know, seeing the truth of my brother, it was not coming from Corinne. So that was beautiful, Dee. Thank you. Very nicely, succinctly put. Andrea.
An example that comes to mind for me, this might not be exactly perfect, but it was really strong for me, is getting the COVID vaccination. Mm-hmm. Because spiritually I'm thinking, you know, it's not real. It doesn't do anything, but it also because it's not real. It doesn't hurt me. Mm-hmm. And therefore I get it in order to take care of other people and to help, you know, be a part of other people's beliefs that I'll be safe for them and, mm-hmm. and can share love. But even more to that point, I was volunteering to help other people get the vaccine. So I was filling out the little cards that had which vaccine they're getting and that kind of thing. With each card I filled, even though I knew, you know, it's just giving magic medicine to an illusion that's not real. Mm-hmm. With each card I'm filling out, I'm saying, you know, God bless you, I love you. God bless you, I love you. It's sort of like, I know this isn't real, but you think it's real. Therefore, I bless you and I love you and go in strength, go in peace. And it's like giving this little blessing to each person, acknowledging the truth of who they are, even while we're all participating in this illusion of getting vaccinated together.
Right.
On the real world level.
That's awesome, Andrea. I absolutely love that example. And I love just as you're filling out the cards for them, blessing them and extending that love. And I very much resonate with everything that you said too about the vaccine. And it's almost like, I don't know. I have a bunch of conflicting thoughts going through my head. Just like, you know, if you're against it or for it, like it's both two sides of the same coin. It's almost like, whether you get it or not, it can all be handed over and used no matter what. We can learn, you know, whichever way somebody decides, you know, to get it or not get it. I'm getting it on Tuesday. So there you go. Yep.
Well, and like my friend said about it, she said, as the Muslims say, pray to Allah and still tie up your camel.
Right. Yeah, you know, because if I'm honest, like my thought for me, and again, I know everybody is different and has their own feelings, but like, if it is this big conspiracy, then like, it's a beautiful opportunity to get it to show that it doesn't matter, that like nothing can hurt me, you know? And if so, like, no matter what the argument is out there, it's like, it can be a demonstration that nothing can hurt me. So thank you for bringing that up, Andrea.
And on the bright side, having the spiritual orientation to it meant that getting the vaccine, I had zero negative effects. Like I felt great with both doses. So
that's awesome.
Oh, that's awesome. Your experience.
That's awesome to hear. That's awesome to hear. And it's funny too, because I don't think I shared this story in my book. When the H1N1 swine flu outbreak happened in whatever year that was, like 2000 something early on, I was terrified of getting sick and terrified of the vaccine. I got the vaccine at that time, but I think I sat in my car for like an hour and a half freaking out about it because it was so scary to me. And it was funny just reflecting on it. Back then I was terrified of getting sick and terrified of the vaccine. This time it's like, you know, like both sides, I feel differently, you know, thinking about the virus and thinking about the vaccine. I'm like, yeah, I'm just going to get it and all good. So thank you, Andrea. That was great. And I wish you could vaccinate us. Andrea is what Tracy and Mike said. I agree. That would be lovely to have you fill out my card too.
I'm sending you that blessing right now. God bless you. I love you. Peace be still.
Yay. Thank you for all of us. That's for all of us. Awesome. Jason.
This is something I just learned, and it really caused me a lot of difficulty with A Course in Miracles, was level confusion. Mm-hmm. What I've learned is that, for me anyway, this is my interpretation of level confusion. I was confused about level confusion. That's how bad it was. So I've one way, David talks about it, is that's the biggest, most common error that he saw during his 20 years of traveling on the road, going to hundreds of different course groups, is that everything's an illusion. Right. And he said, you know, the spirit has to work with us where we are. We can't bring the light to the darkness. We have to bring the darkness to the light. Mm-hmm. So I used to work in clinical trials, and as you guys have heard of the placebo effect, mm-hmm. that is an example of the power of the mind. Mm-hmm. Some people have a bigger, much greater placebo effect. Once they think they're on medicine or even possibly on medicine, they get better. Mm-hmm. And the FDA says, nope, uh-huh. Too big of a placebo effect. So it's just really interesting. That really helped me a lot because it caused me suffering. Why am I having back pain when it's all an illusion? Mm-hmm. And I was going nuts. I was losing my mind. I was just like not able to function in this world. And I'm okay with now getting a vaccine. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So
cool.
Because it works where I am at.
Mm-hmm. And that's, Jason, thank you so much for saying that, because you called to mind for me what I wanted to add. You said it beautifully when you said spirit meets us where we are. I wake up every day still thinking I'm Corinne. I mean, my primary identification is still as a body. I'm constantly talking to the Holy Spirit, and I'm constantly talking to the Holy Spirit. I think most times throughout the day, not all for sure, but even when I am in complete an ego, whatever, I'm still like, Holy Spirit, help. So Holy Spirit meets us where we are. And you're absolutely right about level confusion. It's about taking this is all an illusion teaching and trying to apply it selectively. We apply that selectively because I've heard people, I've done this myself, where, oh gosh, I just stubbed my toe. It's all an illusion. It's all an illusion. Not going to hurt. Or let's use an even more extreme example of like, you know, maybe being against the vaccine because it's not real. But then you get a toothache and you go to the dentist for a root canal. Or even more simply, you're hungry, so you eat. Like we want to pick and choose what we call an illusion. When if we're looking at every other aspect, you know, of our day, how much body identification is still there. So that's where, again, this is a gradual process of unlearning. We have to be kind and easy to ourselves and not judge. I saw a course teacher who has a decent following post about getting the vaccine, and somebody posted, oh my gosh, what do they say? Another course teacher who has fallen off the path or something like that. Like some kind of, we could say judgment, not discernment. And so there's a lot of judgment about what the picture should look like when, again, the course is always asking us to turn to your guidance. Listen within what is right for you, and that we can't lay these ideas on other people. We all have, you know, our guidance, and we're all needing to be where we are, and the Holy Spirit meets us there. So let us not judge, you know, our brothers for wherever they decide to be, whatever they decide to do. And I know actually a lot of course teachers who are getting the vaccine. So just throwing that out there. It's funny. I was like, oh, we don't have a lot of reading. Maybe we'll go to the text and read that as you see him, you will see yourself section, but we didn't need to do that. And if you're interested, the reference is there for chapter 8. It's great to have the extra time to just share and talk. Oh, anybody? Oh, Cheryl, I see your hand. I'm starting to pay attention to the hands. I wasn't noticing them before.
So I was thinking about something the other day that, you know, all of our minds are joined. And then there's this thing about people saying, you know, that the virus isn't real and stuff like that. And then you think to myself, well, if all of our minds are joined and there's millions of people that believe that it's real, then it's quite possible that it can affect someone who's like picking and choosing because they see themselves as a body, you know, like you said, they go to the dentist when they have a toothache or, you know, they believe in cancer or something like that. But then they're doing this denial with other things. And I'm just using the virus COVID as an example, but because it's what's going on right now, but it makes me think, well, what about the fact that all our minds are joined? You know, does that make, that could could have an effect on it? I don't know.
I mean, I think it absolutely can in any direction, because yes, minds are joined. And you know what? There was a reference. What was something in here that we read tonight reminded me of the, what is it called? The double slit experiment, where like on the, it's a quantum physics thing where if you're, you know, thinking, if you're looking at a wave, it's the wave and particle thing and how it behaves. It can switch depending on how you're perceiving it. I can't remember the nitty gritty of it, but there was something in here that we read that reminded me of that. And I don't remember now what it was, but yes, we can absolutely. And I mean, that's the collective piece. And that's why I think that I'm going to go like to an extreme end. That teaching about, we read about the resurrection last week, and that idea that the body can leave through light. Are we collectively there? Like if a body just disappeared through light, what do you think would happen? Like, I think there'd be like massive freak out. Like, I don't think it would go over very well. Like, I don't think we'd be like, oh, look at this. You know, we're not collectively there yet. So I think that there is a absolute collective piece. And yet, because all minds are joined, if any one of us has like an opening and a recognition, like a holy instant, a holy recognition, you know, where truth flashes across the mind, I think that helps the whole. And then, you know, can fear affect, you know, the rest of us? Absolutely. So I think it works, you know, both ways, because like you're saying, Cheryl, minds are absolutely joined. And, but that's the good news, because, you know, whether people find truth through the course or through other pathways, whatever it is, it's like, we're all helping each other. I would tell, Nook Sanchez, because she's been a huge help for me on my journey, that I felt like, you know, she was up this ladder and she'd be like, you know, through her writing, sort of reaching down and helping me take a step up, you know, the ladder rung. And I feel like we're all collectively doing that with each other. And so it's like, so collective progress is pretty slow, and we don't obviously have to be held back by anyone, but that collective piece that you're talking about, I very much agree with. And the fact that, you know, it takes any one of us to have a miracle and a flash of truth through our mind to positively affect the whole in a very real way. I do believe that. That saying in the course about, you know, I can't remember what it says, if it's a miracle or a holy instant, but that when you accept it, a bird with broken wings begins to sing, that miracles touch, they're far more far reaching than we possibly realize. So, thank you, Cheryl.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. John, were you gonna add? I hear you, John. Were you gonna chime in? No?
Hang on. Yeah, actually, I just wanted to say that, what was it now? I lost my train of thought. Oh gosh, I forgot.
That's okay. That's okay. It'll come back.
I'm sorry.
It'll come back.
Corinne, just to let you know, my background's in chemistry, and one of that wave particle duality in quantum physics simply says that the perceiver and the perceived can't be separated. They're completely tied together. And so when I look at something like this phone, it cannot be there the way I'm perceiving it without me perceiving it. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't exist. Mm-hmm. So that's where the oneness comes in. Mm-hmm. And so the experiment is this, that, you know, why is it behaving like a wave? Why is it sometimes behaving like a wave and sometimes behaving like a particle? It's because of the way they designed the experiment. And they've tried to trick themselves, even using computers, to see if they can get just pure data. Uh-huh. To see that it's got to be both.
Uh-huh.
But it never is. It's If you look at it like a wave, it's a wave. If you look at it like a particle, it's a particle.
So the perceiver is always affecting it.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's so cool.
Yeah, look, Google Schrodinger's cat in the box or cat in, yeah. Yeah, Google
cool,
that.
Cool.
It reminds me of the movie, What the Bleep Do We Know?
Yes, I love that movie.
Yeah.
Yep.
Although it's into the consciousness of God, totally.
Yep. Yeah, I love that movie.
Yeah,
I love
that's movie. Exactly what he was saying.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Cool. Thank you, John. Paula, are you going to chime in?
I, because of COVID, the art group that I was painting with last year disbanded. They just started up again in a new location, and I went on Thursday. And oh, I was so delighted to be back in it. And there was just one person there when I arrived. She got right into a political conversation with me. And believe me, we did not have the same, we're not coming from the same place. And immediately I had the presence of mind to go straight to the Holy Spirit with it. Like, I don't want this. Help me out here. And I'm telling you, I did say it's probably better.
Well, you just cut out. I can't hear you.
Oh.
Oh, now you're back.
Okay. I did.
You said say, I probably, uh-huh. Go on.
It's probably better that we do not discuss politics, but then she kept pushing it and I kept going to the Holy Spirit with it. Like, oh, please. And everything shifted. Everything shifted. That has happened so many, many, many times, especially when I was working. It's phenomenal. That's all I can say.
And Paula,
but it's remembering, mm-hmm. You know, building that, that habit.
Yes. And you brought up before that, like, you'd have to pray and pray. And I was like, Paula, you have examples all the time. This is another example. So it's just such a powerful example because all of us, I'm sure, have been in situations that are triggering because they get very political, very fast. Even, my goodness, even like really strong feelings about the vaccine, like that can go really heated really quickly if it just can. So that's always the answer. What you just did is the answer. It's going to the Holy Spirit. It's going to the Holy Spirit. It's going to the Holy Spirit. Because if we don't, like, we're dancing on very ego thin ice.
You said it.
Yep. But you,
what
you
is
did
that
it.
Line about the habit forming repertoire? That's you know, you have to build that habit forming repertoire.
Yeah, yeah. And making, I don't know what the line is, but it is about
but it's in the course somewhere.
Making the Holy Spirit your habit of
that's
training.
It. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's the it. Holy Spirit is the answer no matter what the question.
Yep.
Just remembering that is the issue.
It is true. It is true. So wow, thank you everyone. I see we're at time and thank you for, yes, the recording will be in our Facebook group and then it's archived on my website. So if anybody doesn't have the sign up for that, I can always get that to you so you can get it. I love you all. Thank you so much for sharing as always and for holding space. Like I mentioned at the beginning of the call, we won't meet next week because I'll be in the conference, which you're welcome to come to. I'll put that link in the chat one more time if you didn't get it at the beginning. It's free. To watch live, and then we will resume with our study group then the following week. So I'll see you again here in 2 weeks and hopefully maybe in the conference in a week. Oh, Cheryl's doggy. Hi, sweetie. Bye. pets are welcome. Pet therapy. I love you all. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Good night.
Thank you. Bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye, everyone. Bye.